Welcome to the Radical Mother Village. If you're new here, a radical mother is a woman poised in her power, ready to disrupt cycles of generational trauma, running through her family like wildfire. She's working to improve her life, the lives of her children, and shape the landscape of her community. If that's you, you're in the right place. This podcast is designed to connect you with the resources, inspiration, and the reminder that you are not alone as you embark on your journey of radical mothering. In this show, you can look forward to conversations with fellow cycle breakers, experts in the field of trauma healing, and discussions on the foundational elements it takes to turn your goal of breaking cycles of trauma into a reality with topics like nervous system regulation work, reparenting, and releasing trauma that's held in your body. I'm your host, Krista Bevan, an expert companion for radical mothers, and I'm so excited you're here with me. Now, let's dive in. Hey, mamas. So glad to have you back with me for another episode. I am your host, Krista Bevan. Today, I am chatting with Julia Ainsley, who is a pediatric occupational therapist, and we are going to be chatting all things sensory-sensitive kiddos, what we can do to help support them, the ways in which our children communicate through their behavior, as well as some top tips from Julia about what we can do to create more family harmony. This was a wonderful conversation. Julia was so gracious in sharing some really wonderful and relatable examples and stories from her own life about how she integrates these things, both professionally but also personally. I really could relate to a lot of what she was saying, so I know that you're going to be able to as well. And then at the end of our conversation, Julia talks about the gifts of imperfection and why that's so important. And I think really so important for those of us who are cycle breaker moms, which is hopefully you if you're listening to the show. Otherwise, you've probably found yourself in the wrong spot and you're welcome to stay. But really, everyone that's here, we're all dedicated to this mission of giving our kids a different experience of childhood than what we had ourselves, right? And what Julia talks about and what she coaches on really helps to support those of us on that mission. And so I was really excited to chat with her, and I'm excited to share this conversation with you. So my guest is Julia Ainsley. She's a mother of three young children. She's also a practicing pediatric occupational therapist for the past 10 years. And through her work, Julia supports families holistically to get to the root of what might be preventing a child from living their best life. So she does this through evaluating children in motor, sensory, behavioral, social play, cognitive, and self-care spheres. She really takes this holistic approach, which I love. And her mission is to support parents in finding what's aligned for their family. And she herself is on this very same journey at home each day. Julia also has a side hustle called Haramaki Love. We talk about this at the end of the episode. These are really fun. So she makes and sells this product. They're called Haramakis. These are Japanese-inspired belly bands for women, for pregnant mamas, and also for men. In her spare time, Julia enjoys yoga, yoga nidra, and she attempts to meditate. This made me laugh so much when she shared this part of her bio. She said, her current personal best is 8 days in a row, and she hopes to beat this record before her children move out of the house. And I feel her on that. The struggle is real. And like I said, that made me laugh. So I appreciated that. Without further ado, let's get into it. Today's episode, Top Tips for Family Harmony, from pediatric OT, Julia Ainsley. All right, mamas, welcome back to another episode of the Radical Mother Village podcast. I am very excited today to be chatting with Julia Ainsley. Julia and I first connected in the Radical Mother Village Facebook group. So shameless plug for that. If you're not in there yet, you should go do that. The link to all of that goodness is in the show notes, but enough about that. Let's get into this. Julia, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. And I should say, I was in your anchored class too.
Yes, you were. Yes. Thank you. I was actually just reviewing some of that material. That's a good reminder.
So good.
Thank you. And people can actually still sign up for that and watch the replay. So I will put that information. Thank you for that plug. Mm-hmm. I'll put that in the show notes as well. So Julia, the question I like to ask all guests to start off with is, what are some of the cycles that you are breaking for yourself and also for your kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big question.
I know.
It's a big question.
We go right for it here.
Let's do it. I like it. So, you know, I won't get into my whole family history because there's a lot there. But for my personal story, it's one of loss, where very young, so I had a lovely, sweet, you know, quote unquote, normal childhood. And then when I was small, my father died very tragically and suddenly. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of, I guess you could call him, you know, the rock, the anchor of our family. And so from that point on, my mom, my sister and I, our life changed dramatically, right? And for me personally, from that point on, so I was 14, my sister was 12. I kind of got into a state of hypervigilance, one to this day I'm working on undoing, right? And that hypervigilance, as we know, for the nervous system, is just so tiring. It's so exhausting. Yeah. And kind of coupled with the hypervigilance, I was feeling very untethered because I had lost that, you know, attachment figure. And then with that, in an effort to kind of control everything around me, to not let anything bad happen to me, I've been big into the perfectionism. And I would, you know, have you heard about the pathological perfectionism diagnosis? I'm not diagnosing myself, but I was veering towards that. Have you heard of that term?
Pathological. I didn't realize that it was actually an official diagnosis, though I'm not at all surprised. I know that is definitely a thing and can often be a trauma response.
And that's what it was for me. And that's what it is for me. Right. And you know what? I'm talking diagnosis. I actually do not know if it's in the DSM-5. I don't think it is, but it's basically a very rigid, very severe form of perfectionism.
Yeah.
So for my kids and in my life, I've been working as best I can to kind of undo that and let myself be. And interestingly, when I did start my parenting journey 8.5 years ago, so my oldest son is 8, it all kind of bubbled right up to the surface really strongly, right? As it does, right? So like that residue of trauma, like so sticky, it just came up. And in my case, it presented as pretty severe postpartum anxiety. So I was petrified of losing my son. I was obsessed with it. Yes. And my son's actually named after my dad, James. And it was very, very strong. And as an occupational therapist, we always talk about function, and I was not functioning well. And so parenthood kind of pushed me to take a deeper look at myself and work on myself more, and trying for my children to undo that kind of, you are what you do, you know, you are what you produce. No, it's you are who you are, and kind of letting yourself just be you and not having to be perfect and not having to be on guard. And I screw up all the time. Like I see my daughter be like, "Mommy, don't worry." And she's soothing me because she knows how I'm anxious about XYZ. And it breaks my heart. And I'm, you know, every other week I'll be like, "Oh man, I am screwing them up." But I'm modeling the imperfection, right? I'm trying to show them that I am very anxious and it's who I am. And I've explained to the kids how it presented for me. So that's kind of the gist, the gestalt of my story. But it's something that I work with every day. I wish there was like a magic pill or a magic bullet that could just switch it off, but it's a work in progress.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. And I want to come back to this idea of modeling imperfection with your kids, because I think that's really, really important. But talk to me a little bit about the work that you do as a pediatric occupational therapist and how you came to do that work. Because I admittedly, and I've told you this before, don't really know what OTs do. You've explained it to me, but I didn't really know before that. And I have a feeling it's something that more people probably need in their lives or in their kids' lives than maybe realize it like I did.
Yeah, I mean, I love to say like everyone can benefit from an OT.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be sick. You don't have to be unwell. It's just, we specialize in helping a person live their best life, basically. How I came into it is very funny. And it's a story that I haven't shared with many people. But so I've been practicing now since 2011. And before going to school, returning to school to do my master's of science, I had an arts degree. I lived in Japan. I did, you know, kind of, I was looking into human rights work. I was doing that sort of thing. And then I watched a show. This is the truth. I watched a show about Siamese twins who had been conjoined at the top of their heads, who were surgically separated. And the show, you know, obviously talked to the surgeons and to the doctors, but then it spent a good portion on the rehab. And who was doing the rehab? Well, there was a pediatric physiotherapist and a pediatric OT. So the physiotherapist was very interested in how the children were moving. So because they'd been conjoined at the top of the head, they'd spent most of their lives in supine, right? On their backs, rolling onto their tummies. So the physiotherapist was very interested in helping them crawl and learn all those developmental milestones to get to standing. The OT was very curious about how they were eating, how they were playing, how they were interacting, how they were basically doing the things that need to be done in a day to make a full life, dressing. Because up until then, they'd been quite dependent. So OTs kind of take a holistic view to the person. And in my case, for children, I call it family-centered practice because we can't separate them, right? And we look at everything. So how the child's moving, how they're taking care of themselves, self-care. So whether it's teeth brushing, dressing, feeding, play, behavior, social, let's see if I get all around, cognitive. And then a big one, which I'm sure, you know, it's become a bit of a buzzword now, is sensory integration. Mm-hmm. So, and it ties so much into the work you do with regulation, but it's how we receive information from all of our five senses, plus the vestibular and the proprioceptive, right? And for your listeners, the vestibular is in the inner ear. So we call it kind of the inner GPS of the body. So it's what helps us know where our body is in space, where our head is in alignment. So for example, when you're in the car, your vestibular system is being activated when you're on a swing, right? So a child who might be afraid of a swing might have what we call an overactive vestibular system. So they're getting too much information and it's scary. And then proprioception is also your feeling of your body in space. So it's the information that your muscle bellies, your joints get from your environment. So right now I'm sitting in a chair, you know, my feet are on the floor, and that's my proprioceptive system telling me where my body is in space. So we look at all those senses and see how they come together. And for some kids, there can be difficulty there. And we have to kind of, we support them to help them balance them out to be more functional in their daily life.
That's so fascinating and so needed. Do you mind if we talk more about the sensory piece? Because sure. I know that this is something just even in the Facebook group that a lot of moms mm-hmm. have said, oh yeah, my kiddos have that. And it mm-hmm. seems to be a big deal. And I will also say selfishly, I'm starting to notice some of this with my own son. And so I've been paying more attention to these things and these stories that other mothers are relating, going, wait a minute, we're dealing with that same thing. Mm-hmm. So do you mind just talking more about the impact of that, both for kids and also for parents and how we cope with that?
Sure. So we all have it. Okay. I mean, no one's sensory system is perfectly equal among all the senses, right? We all have it. I've self-diagnosed myself as a sensory over-responsive profile. So as OTs, we evaluate, we don't diagnose sensory processing disorders, but we do evaluate them. And then of course, strategize to support, right? So for me, I'll give an example, and this is a common profile that we see. I'm a sensory over-responder to noise, to touch, to visual. So my threshold for noise, touch, visual is low, meaning that a lot of noise quickly riles me up. It quickly gets to my nervous system and my nervous system goes, whoa, oh, 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 ça va pas bien. I'm in Montreal, so I'll try not to speak too much French, but it's quickly signaling to my body that something's wrong. Same with visual. I get very easily visually overstimulated. And it's interesting because, you know, tied into that perfectionism thing, one piece for me has always been feeling soothed and calmed by a very neat environment. It's related to that visual overstimulation. So sometimes I'll come into a room, obviously I have three kids, I live with children, but I'll come into a room, my husband will be with the children, I'll be like, whoa, and he'll look at me like, what? But for me, it's overwhelming. Okay. And then touch. We don't have to get too much into touch, but when you think of a kiddo who might not have the vocabulary, the words to identify those things, they might go into, let's say, a classroom, a preschool room that's very, very busy and messy and loud. Well, immediately their amygdala is firing, they're getting to fight or flight. And what do kids do? They tell us what's going on through their behavior. Okay, so I'll give you an example. I had a kid a couple of years ago who would have these random, just, how should I define it? Wasn't aggression, it was just random loss of control, bodily loss of control, whereby this kiddo would hit, sometimes punch, sometimes take something and throw it. And we went in and we did an evaluation. So as OTs, we look at the person, right? We look at all the parts of the person. We also look at the environment, super important. So the physical environment and the social environment. And then we look at the activity itself. Okay, so we do an activity analysis. So is the activity too much? Is it not enough? So we're looking always for what we call the just right challenge, right? So, you know, we know about the proximal zone of development and all that. We always want a kiddo to be just slightly overshot from their challenge, but not too much, because then they'll just like, forget it, I give up. So this kiddo, after all the analysis, you want to know what it was? It was another sweet child who had a very high-pitched voice who set the kid off every time. And it took some seeing. You know, these are not always, you know, there's causation, correlation. And so many times the parent will come to me and say, but Julia, I gave him the exact same snack. Let's say it was, you know, I gave him the crackers with the cheese, but this time it just, and I'm like, but that was just a little catalyst. It was everything that built up before, right? And so in this kid's case, there was a voice in the classroom that just affected the child to the point where they were losing control of their body, because their sensory system, their auditory system was getting so overwhelmed by that noise that they were lashing out. So I've kind of done a circuitous way, and please ask me questions so we can clarify anything.
Well, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. And what I've found in my own experience with my son as he's getting older is I'm starting to notice the things that are sort of pushing him over the edge that I can start to see patterns of. And I'm recognizing how I have so many of those same patterns that I didn't realize until I'm watching them unfold in him. So for us, it's like a clothing thing. It's like literally like the sensation of clothing on his body. I can remember my mother telling me, and I'm still this way to this day, but I can remember her telling me that putting socks and shoes on me was the most miserable thing she ever had to do, because my, like the seam on my sock had to be just right or I would kick and scream and freak out about it. And I'm still the exact same way.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing little things like that with him that are frustrating to me as a mother when we're trying to leave the house and get someplace on time. Right. And what it's doing is I'm recognizing the pattern, and I'm actually able to, when we have 5 minutes of grace time to get someplace, I'm able to hold better compassion for both him, but also for myself, that this is just the way our brains are wired.
100%.
Right.
It's so good that you recognize that, because it is frustrating, right? When you're trying to get out the door, you're running late, you have to be somewhere. And of course, our agendas never match up with our children's agendas.
Never.
Obviously, why would they?
Ever.
You know, I mentioned tactile, and that's an over response to tactile input.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we live in this society where there's a product that's been developed for every single thing. And I have countless referrals for kids who struggle with clothing. And yes, we have all sorts of socks on the market, seamless socks and this sock and that sock. I can send you a few links. But before I have parents spend money on stuff, I try and see, you know, what we can do and how we can work through it. And the antidote, interestingly, to all of this over-responsive profile, it happens to be the antidote for the under-responsive too. So the under-responsive is someone whose threshold is extremely high. So they actually need input, right? It's a child who might seem more passive. It's a child who didn't cry much as an infant, right? So sometimes I'll have a parent say, easiest baby in the world. We do, you know, tantrums are normal. We want that. If I have a parent come to me and say, never had a tantrum. Okay, that's nice, but tantrums are developmentally expected and normal, right? So the antidote is deep proprioceptive input, heavy work. So deep pressure in the body, because what is it? It's grounding. Think of your anchored class, right? And that's why I love your anchored class, because I do this with kids, but I need someone to do it with me. Mm-hmm. I'm also struggling. I have the words for it. I have all the metacognitive strategies, but at the end of the day, you need to get in the body. If you're not in the body, forget it, right? So with kids, it's that deep work. So let me give you an example. For a teacher, I'll tell a teacher, for this kid over here who's, you can see, over aroused, you know, too sensitive to input, I'm going to tell that teacher, this child here is going to be your helper for anything heavy. You need to carry books to the library, you give that child a stack of books to the library. You need to move chairs, he's the one. Move all your chairs. Anything that's grounding the body, heavy work, uses your muscles. At home, carry the groceries, right? Before we put our socks on and do this, I often will do deep massage to the feet. I'll do that in clinic. Can we always do that? No. So that's why we have products, we have charts, we have different strategies we can use. But anything, and when you think about it, let's say you're very sensitive, you're ticklish. When you do that deep pressure, right? And I remember you also teaching us some of those strategies. It calms the nervous system down. So mm-hmm. after, when the lighter touch comes into contact, it's less arousing.
Yeah. Yeah. Which makes total sense. I mean, that's why things like weighted blankets have become so popular in the last few years, right? Because there's something to that, literally grounding your body with weight and pressure that's exactly. soothing to your nervous system and can be for your kids as well.
100%. However, I have to say, as an OT, I have to bring it up that
yes,
about the weighted blankets.
Say that again. You just cut out.
We're on the fence about the weighted blankets.
Oh, really?
We are. Yes. There have been some safety issues with them. So there is actually for weighted. So we do weighted garments, weighted vests. You know, there are different therapeutic modalities that can be used with weight. But there's an actual specific ratio of weight of the item versus weight of the body that has to be respected. We're meant to move in our sleep, right? So to have yes. a weight on us, not ideal. So I will often recommend something more like a Lycra sheet that can be tucked in. So the child can still move, but as they move, they feel, and I'm moving my body, your listeners can't see, but they feel the pressure of the sheet against their skin. Or I'll recommend quite tight undergarments, kind of like a tight bathing suit, which for some children can be soothing. There's a lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remind parents that there's no one size fits all. And that, and this is kind of a key takeaway, I often recommend to try a strategy at least 10 times before adopting it or giving it up. Reason being, sometimes it's literally on trial number 8 where you get the buy-in from the child. And listen, I'm a mom, I'm a parent. And when I'm a parent, I'm not always an OT. And how many times have I tried something and after twice, I'm like, this is not working. I throw it out and I say, oh, Juliet, just a second. It takes time. Let's keep trying it. Now, having said that, you use your common sense. If you're on trial 1 and 2, it's an absolute disaster. And the child, of course, we let go. But it's kind of like, meh, 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 meh. Sometimes it's amazing. On trial 8, trial 9, the kid is like, this is the best thing ever. And it might work. And any parent can relate. It'll work for a few months. And then we need to switch it up, right? But yeah, the weighted blanket, I think, is a nice idea. And it can be okay in short spurts. But personally and professionally, I could not recommend putting my child under a weighted blanket for the night.
You know, it's funny, because as you said that, I was like, well, yeah, there's a safety concern with little kids, obviously, but I wasn't even thinking about them being used like for sleep overnight. I guess how mm-hmm. I've only ever used them has been in short bursts. So,
and that's exactly how it should be used, as a tool.
Yeah.
Part right. of the toolkit. In the same way, like I love using large bean bags. You
yes.
jump into one and you kind of settle in. And actually I'll squish, we call it squishes, but I'll take another bean bag and put it on top of the kiddo with the head out, obviously, and give them a bit of squish, a bit of pressure. And they love it. They
yeah.
love it.
Yeah. Totally. I do bean bags like in my hands when I do yoga sometimes and teach, especially in like restorative postures, to hold like a small bean bag and just that little bit of pressure down. And then you can place them on different parts of your body too, right? You can put them on your chest or your abdomen or even your forehead, right? You can shoulders, and you can get that sort of sensation of being pressed into the ground and held and supported, right? Anchored into the ground.
We're speaking the same language. And of course, as I told you, the products, they have all these weighted animals. Have you seen them on the market?
I haven't seen the weighted animals.
Yeah. So they have a weighted lizard and a weighted snake, and they're kind of this like lycra stretchy material. And we have them in schools. We have them in clinic, and we'll put them on a kiddo's shoulder or on the lap.
It's the same kind of idea.
Seated work, same idea, but you don't need to run out and buy something. You can grab a couple towels and wrap them up and put a Ziploc of beans in the middle. And, you know, I just, obviously in our modern world, I love throwing money at problems. Oh, your boots aren't fitting. Boom. Let's order something. These boots aren't working. Of course we all do it. And then I look at my, you know, Amazon bill and I have a mini panic attack. But yeah, especially when we don't know if it'll work, it's kind of nice to see how we can trial and error it, you know, with things we already have at home.
Yeah. Julia, switching gears for just a moment, you mentioned that you have a top tip that you recommend for all families. And as soon as I read that, I was, of course, immediately intrigued. So enlighten me and the listeners on what that top tip is. I can't wait to hear what it is now.
Okay. Well, it's a two-part tip. So this started because,
even better,
you know, ever since, so since COVID, I've done a lot of parenting coaching and a lot of, you know, Zoom and online stuff. And then also I got pregnant. So when I was pregnant, I wasn't able to work one-on-one with kids because it's a super active job and many people do it. But in my case, I was sick to the point that it wasn't possible. And a lot of times parents would say, Julia, you know, I know you're going on leave. Like if you had one thing, what would it be? And so it's twofold. Number one, and this is not going to come as a surprise to you, it's take care of you. Take care of the parent. Honestly, if there was one single tip I could give any parent, it's number one, take care of you. And it's hard, but of course there's a trickle down effect to your kids. And part of taking care of you is setting boundaries. And I'm learning to get better at that myself. Just this morning, we're having pancakes. It's summer holidays. So we're kind of, you know, on a different routine. And my son, I had one left and he had finished his. And my son was like, Mommy, I want more. And I said, sorry, sweetheart, you know, we divided them up. And he said, Mommy, can I have some of yours? And you know what, Krista? I said, love, I'm really sorry. This one's for me.
For you.
Yeah. And you know what? A couple of years ago, I was like, yeah, take everything. And so I offered alternatives. I said, you know, we have fruit over here. We have some cheese. And I said, you know what, sweetheart? Mommy needs this. I've been breastfeeding a baby all night, which is true. And I didn't give him reasons. I just said, no, this is for Mommy's body. And you know what he did? He said, okay. At one point, we have to stop. We have to take care of ourselves a little bit. And that's such a small example, right? But part of that is moving away from like we try and do all the things for the benefit of our kids and we kind of forget about ourselves. We don't need to do that. Taking care of ourselves, whether it's therapy, whether it's, you know, trying to meditate as I do, whatever it is, whatever your self-care is. And I realize I'm coming from a place of privilege to be able to talk about this, but it can be micro things. And it's so, so necessary. And the more regulated we are, the more our children are. So the second thing, and again, this is a simple thing, but it's as much as you can to be in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And listen, I live in a big city. And so nature some days might be going to the park. But as much as you can, being in nature for a child's sensory, motor development, behavioral, nature is just soothing to the nervous system. You know, we've all heard of porous bathing and it's good for everyone. So those are my two top tips. And I feel like nature is such a good antidote to everything in this world. For us too, for taking care of ourselves.
Yeah. You are preaching to the choir for sure on both of those. I love both of those tips. And especially, yeah. I'm gonna tack onto your nature tip. And if you can get barefoot, like literally make contact with the ground, right? Like get your hands dirty, touch the tree, get the mud between your toes. And that's going to have so many benefits. I see. It's so funny. So I have to say, and I'll admit that we're pretty, we're pretty lax in our household. So my son runs around like long haired, no pants, no shoes. He's sort of a wild child of the forest. Right.
But I
see so many parents like at the park and things who are terrified if their kids take their shoes off for 1 second. And I get it. Oh, we have to be careful where they're stepping and there might be stuff on the ground, but still there's this like fear about interacting with nature with our actual bodies sometimes. And it just, it makes me cringe. And of course I'm the mom with the kid at the playground who's ripping his shoes off the second we get there. But
You know what? Sensory wise, that's so healthy.
Yes, I
know. So we're giving him tactile sensory experiences. So I'm the mom who's like, has OCD tendencies. I'm not diagnosed as OCD, but I want everything clean, clean. But as the OT, if you saw my kids eating, like my baby now, she's 8 months old, it's just a free for all because I want her to experience those sensory, like I'm just letting her do it. Same with my kids get dirty, dirty, dirty. And honestly, I don't care. I don't care. We're in the mud. We're doing it. Although it's funny, Krista, you're saying take your shoes off for me. I can't do that because it's too much for my system.
Yeah.
So for me, I have to take it in through my other senses so I don't get overwhelmed and anxious because I'm dirty. I was that baby who my parents tried to put me on the sand and whoop, my legs would just fly up and I would sit on a towel. They didn't need a babysitter. It was amazing. I wouldn't move. But right, the sensory over-responsive to tactile for me. And so I know that about myself.
Right.
And it's interesting because adults who have any sensory, we can call it dysfunction or imbalance or whatever you want to call it, we happen to be some of the best compensators I've ever met. And older kids too. I'll meet 12-year-olds who have compensated so well for their sensory difficulties. They've had to figure it out, right? So sometimes we'll grow out of things, other times we'll compensate. But yeah, just a little note there. Interesting.
Yeah.
See, I mean, our bodies are smart.
They are. And I love that idea of self-exploration and self-awareness and knowing your own system, because the answer is different for each one of us, right? So for me,
totally,
I've had to embrace being barefoot because I find that my tendency is to want to have shoes on. Uh-huh. And what I find is that when I am barefoot, it actually makes my sensory overload less overloaded, that I can ground literally through my feet. And when I'm outside on the grass, then it makes those other sensory inputs less overwhelming to my system.
Interesting. I should try it then. I should push myself. And you know what? In therapy, I would push a kid. And when I say push, again, just over their edge a little bit in their, you know, window of tolerance, we can call it.
Right.
And it's kind of like a push and pull, and it's a beautiful dance. And it's, I love doing therapy for that reason. And the parents are watching and they're crying sometimes, and I'm trying not to cry. But you know, when a kid for the first time is doing something that you never, you know, but yeah, no, thank you. Good food for thought. I'm going to try and push myself a bit. You know, it's interesting speaking of all this, because just recently we were traveling, little anecdote. And I'm also, you know, I consider myself, whether you want to call it an HSP, highly sensitive person, or an empath, whatever. Very sensitive person. And now that we're a family of five, we needed two taxis to get back to the airport anyway. And the taxis arrive, the first one arrives, and the driver was clearly not having a great day. Okay. He was very gruff. He was a bit, he looked exasperated when he saw us with the car seats. He's like, oh, here we go. And being a very sensitive person, I was like, oh boy. The next driver came and he was just like a grandpa, like angel, like, oh, look at the baby and this and that. And I had already started getting my baby, who I was traveling with, in the car seat in the first car. And I stopped and I asked my partner, and he's a very flexible person and he's not very sensitive to those types of things. And I said, Daniel, I'm sorry, I need to switch cars. And he was like, yes. And he switched with me, and I rode with the grandpa with my baby and my other child, and my husband rode with the big kid in the other car. And we didn't even discuss it much, but that was me protecting myself in that moment, because I knew that it would have stayed with me. I had to protect myself. This is just came to mind because we literally came back 2 days ago.
Yeah.
But it's about knowing yourself. And right. a few years ago, I would have just been like people pleaser, like, and again, I had the option, you know, had I not had the option, I would have rode with him. It's not the end of the world, but all these little things, they take energy.
Yeah. It starts to add up.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that is such a beautiful example of both the power of knowing yourself, which is the first piece, right? I often say alteration follows awareness. We need to know the thing first before we can do anything about it. But then there's the second step, which is then honoring what you know about yourself and not overriding it.
Right.
And that's where you turned to your partner and said, gonna need some help on this one. Need to make a switch. And thankfully
and he did not ask a question.
Right. And he knows you and he know he's fine with that. And so, and I can just, I can picture my husband doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's really, it's knowing and honoring and respecting what you need. Right.
Yeah. And that's a micro example. And you know, to that point, I'm always working with parents to do that too. And I think that's one point I think is important we bring across today is that parents are the experts on their own kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any professional who comes in to think they know more than the parent is getting themselves into trouble. It's foolish in my personal and professional opinion.
Yes.
You know your kid best. We're here to support you, to coach you, to do what we specialize in and provide you with, you know, what we're finding. But no one knows your kid better than you do. And I think it's very important for parents to remember that and to be able to tune in to what their intuition and what their inside is telling them about their child, because they know.
Yeah, that's a beautiful reminder. And I agree wholeheartedly. I learned that literally when my son was days old in the hospital and I had nurses pestering me, and I spoke up and I was like, listen, I need you to stop coming in here and poking and prodding me every 60 minutes. Please stop.
Good for you.
You're overwhelming me and you're overwhelming him. We're fine.
But you know what? Good for you. Because not everyone's able to do that.
Yeah. Well, I had one nurse who was like, got it, mama. Good for you. Good. And then I had another nurse who was like giving me the business. And I was like, I'm not having it. I'm not having it. I just looked at the time and I knew that we could just keep talking, but I do want to come back because I said that we would. And I think that this fits in with what we were just talking about, but this idea of why it's so important that we model imperfection for our kids and let them see us in our full humanity. So can you speak to that and why you think that's so important?
Yeah. I mean, obviously nobody's perfect and life is beautiful, but it's filled with challenge. And I think we're doing our children a disservice to always show them the rosy picture that everything's perfect and everything's fine all the time. Even though we want to protect them. You know, I openly cry in front of my kids. My baby now is 8 months old, as I said, but in the first weeks and months, like I struggled a lot and I cried in front of them a lot. And I was very open and I explained what was happening. Of course, my kids are 8 and 5, so they were able to understand, and we have to do it in an age-appropriate way. But the other big piece is to model alongside the imperfection, the resilience and the problem solving. So an example I'll often give to clients is talk to yourself. When something's going a bit off, talk to yourself. So let's give you an example. So in this recent trip, we filled with examples. It was really the vacation for memories. As I told you, we caught COVID, we got canceled, we got delayed. It was wonderful. And it's funny because it was wonderful, but my kids have great memories of this trip because I modeled regulation. I definitely struggled. But so here's the example. So our flight that was leaving at 9 p.m. got canceled. Okay. And we're all sitting in the airport for 7 hours and it gets canceled. And I kind of do it unconsciously now, but I kind of said, okay, Julia, our flight's canceled. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I have 3 tired children, Daniel, my partner. And again, I'm, you know, privileged to be partnered. He went to see if he could locate car seats. What are we going to do? So I think we're going to have to rent a hotel. So I talk through things in front of my kids. And trust me, when you're talking to yourself, your kids' ears will perk up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh. You know, or
there she goes again. Mom's doing it again.
But I'm showing them how I'm problem solving.
Yes.
And I also said, oh, I feel very, very anxious right now. And I'll say that all the time in front of my kids. And I'll also say to my kids, especially when they're having a hard time and I'm supporting them, I'll say, you know what, sweetheart, I need a second to go soothe myself. And I'll kind of step away and take breaths. Sometimes I'll just put my hand on my heart and say, Julia, you're a good mom. Even though your kid is struggling, you're a good mom. You're okay. And I'll breathe. And my kids are watching. They're watching every single thing we do. And sometimes I'll lose my, you know what, and then I'll repair. But I'm just kind of showing them the spectrum because that's real life. And my parents, I will give them credit. They showed me a lot. My mom happens to be a psychologist. That's a whole other story for another podcast. But they showed me, I remember my parents fighting and then repairing. You know, and I think that's important for children to witness that.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. And I get that question a lot. I can think of a couple of different girlfriends that have texted me, oh my God, we just had a huge fight and our child saw, and now I'm freaking out that they saw us fighting. Yeah. And I'm like, people fight. That's what happens. Yeah. Let them see you make up also. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, this is how they learn to be a human, is to not deny these parts of themselves that are going to happen to them too. Because if you hide them and then they have those experiences, which they're inevitably going to do, they feel like it's something that needs to be hidden and that they should feel shameful for having big feelings or feeling anxious when it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you've got three kids and you're stranded at an airport and your flight got canceled. Like, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
There's nothing to be ashamed about. Yeah. Let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. Let's problem solve. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm totally with you on that.
And before we hopped on the call, we talked about how you're expecting your second baby and how I always remind myself that siblings are learning to be in relationship with others. And basically that's what we're teaching our kids when we're modeling things in our relationship. We're teaching them how to be in relationship with others.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And I think that's important.
Yes. That's important. I agree. Julia, if you could go back in time and give yourself a piece of advice as a younger mother, what would you tell her?
Oh, man. Oh, you know, I think I would first of all just hold her hand and just, or give her a hug and say, you are really doing the best that you can. You know, and I think I would say, not to assume that anyone could do a better job than you could with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are their mother for a reason.
Yeah.
Nobody's perfect. And just to give yourself grace. And the final thing I will say, because I'm impressed that you, with your first child and, you know, in the hospital, were able to turn those nurses away. I was not. I got better as I had more children. But I would say, tune in, listen in. We have so many inputs, so many distractions. You're the expert on your kid and on yourself. You know what you need deep down. It's hard to find it sometimes, but tune in. Yeah. And honestly, to all the mamas out there, all the love, because it's quite the job. It's a big job.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful job, but it's a tough one.
Yes, definitely. All right, Julia. And then the last thing is, I know that you are not on social media, but you do have a total side project that is really exciting. And I was looking at your website last night because you have a really fun product that you create and sell on the side. So tell me more about that and shamelessly plug your product to the listeners.
Oh, you're very sweet. Funny. So many people don't even know about my little side hustle, but I've had it for probably like 15 years now. And I lived in Japan and I lived there for a few years. And there was this product that I fell in love with called a haramaki. So hara refers to the core of the body, and maki, like a maki sushi roll, is to wrap. So Eastern medicine believes in keeping the kidneys warm and the core warm. And so they wear these bands around their midsection. And so I brought them home and my family and my friends loved them. And I started making them myself. And I started this little business and I called it Haramaki Love. And it's been my side hustle for 15 years. It aligns well actually with OT because it helps support the midsection, you know, gives awareness to the midsection, but it's great for pregnancy, not for pregnancy. I live in Montreal, so it's very cold most of the time and it really warms you up. We have a lot of athletes who wear it. also some people wear it like kind of, I don't want to say a girdle, but again, to give them that support. So yeah, it's these belly bands that I make, and I will send you one actually, Krista.
Oh my gosh.
You need one. And they're actually really good as nursing. Like when you have to lift your shirt when you're nursing, it kind of gives you that.
Good use for them. Yeah.
And I wore it as a nursing bra at the beginning too, because I couldn't really deal with an actual bra.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it, you know what it reminds me of? From the Lorax, what are those called? Sneeds. A sneed is a thing that everyone needs. It's like the things that they make from the truffula trees. Yeah. And it just makes me think it's like the more you start thinking about it, the more uses you can find that this is like this multi-purpose product.
We're always wearing it, except when it's very hot like it is now. I'm freezing without it now.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like when you think about it, like when your midsection is uncovered, it cools your whole body. It's like your internal thermostat's right there, right?
Totally.
All
right. Well, we will definitely put the link to that website so that listeners can go check it out. You've got some really, really cute ones on there. All right, Juliet, thank you so much for your time and wisdom. We will definitely have to have you back on the show once the baby's here, once I'm back from maternity leave. But in the meantime, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Krista.
All right, mamas, that wraps up another episode of the Radical Mother Village podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, will you do me a giant favor and share it with another mama who might love it too? You can also share on social media and tag me. I'm on Instagram at The Radical Mother Village. And if you are looking to connect with fellow radical mothers who are also doing this work and understand the unique challenges that it can bring up in your parenting life, then I would love to invite you to the free Facebook group I facilitate, which is also called The Radical Mother Village. You can search for it on Facebook, or you can follow the link in the show notes to join us. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week.